Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, Tara Reed, says, I'm going swimming. And then she posted a picture of her kind of hanging off a boat, which it's not the most, I would say it's not the most technical way to dive off a boat. She's just kind of hanging backwards off a boat. So I'm a little worried for Tara Reed's safety. How's your safety doing?
Maybe she doesn't really, is she confused about what swimming is? Maybe she thinks that swimming just means you're by the water.
Right. It kind of feels like a What About Bob? Say, like, I'm sailing. I sail right now. Like, I'm swimming. It's like, no, you have to be in the water.
You have to be in the water. God bless Tara. Man, it is a dead time of the year. We talk, everyone on Twitter is, of course, talking about Zach Lowe's Grantland article on team names. I weighed in with my list this morning. I feel very strongly about team names. I'm very opinionated on this subject. I will say this, though. I'm very opinionated on the subject in a very much like we could yell at each other in a bar about this, but I'm not like actually, I don't actually feel anything about this. I don't actually care.
Like, right. Yeah. This is something where Jared Wade did something years ago.
I remember that.
On Both Teams Played Hard, where you basically like criticized, you ranked the logos, not just like the team name, but the logo itself. And I participated in it. And at the time, like I came up with whatever opinion I had on it from studying the logo, but then after I was just like, you know, someone was mad at me for I think something I said about the Hornets logo, because I kind of just said like, you know, Hugo looks drunk and he's like, he's really let himself go, he's just really fat now, and you know, he's got to pull his life together, something like that. And someone's like, how can you not like Hugo? And I was like, no, I don't have any feelings about this, I was just trying to be funny.
Right.
Like, I don't like, if you sit and think about the majority of NBA team names, they're all kind of stupid.
Is there any way to not make a team name stupid? Like,
no, because you have to, you're trying to find something that appeals to anybody. Like, you're not looking for, hey, our basketball fans are going to love this. Like, no, you almost want something that would make non-basketball fans interested. Like, if you have the Pelicans, then your job is to like get someone in New Orleans who wasn't previously caring about their NBA team to be like, oh, Pelicans, that's interesting. Like, that's kind of your goal, right? Is to make kids happy, make merchandise sellable, and kind of just get people to notice you. They're all stupid.
It's weird. It's interesting because I think about it from my mind immediately goes to like what free agents think, but they don't care either. As evidenced by, I always think about this because this is something that bugged me for a long time. I went to Missouri, so I hate the Kansas Jayhawks with a passion, and I could never understand why anyone would want to go to Kansas. Like, all these great players go to Kansas, and I'm like, if you're Paul Pierce, why are you spending time in Lawrence, Kansas? Why? Like, admission, Lawrence is actually pretty cool. Like, it really is a pretty cool town. In some ways, it's cooler than Columbia. I'm going to get my degree revoked, but it's a pretty cool town. But it's not like you could go to all these other schools and have so much of a cooler experience. If you're like a 19-year-old, 20-year-old, 21-year-old kid, why would you go there? But these programs have this idea, like there's this idea about the Jayhawks, there's this idea about the Tar Heels, there's this idea about the Duke Blue Devils that consistently kind of makes it's cool to go to these places. And the NBA has the same kind of thing with the Los Angeles Lakers. That's the stupidest name. I have no idea how you can possibly begin to defend that name from any perspective based off of the fact that it moved and retained that title, and it's inherently a stupid name. But the Lakers are cool. They just are.
Right.
And these things are almost inherent where you can't really argue them because they just kind of exist.
Yeah, I mean, it's just – it's a thing where I went through and I think I've told the story on the podcast before, but the reason I'm a Timberwolves fan is because when I was like 6 or 7, my dad was reading the paper, and he said, hey, there are two new teams coming in. It's the Magic and the Wolves, or in the Timberwolves. And I thought Magic was stupid. Like, I still think Magic is stupid. And I thought Wolves were cool because I'm 6 or 7 years old. And so, like, that's why I picked what I picked. And the fact that Zach Lowe had had the Magic behind the Timberwolves, I don't even care where the Timberwolves were, just the fact that he had the Magic as a worse name than the Timberwolves validated all of my NBA life. And it's really just finding something, like, I really just feel like it's finding something that kind of looks cool on a t-shirt.
I like the Hornets logo. That's one of the reasons that I liked Alonzo Mourning, and I like the Hornets logo. That's why I became a huge Charlotte Hornets fan.
Yeah, and they had that beehive. At one point, they had that beehive looking court. Like there's all there were all kinds of reasons,
right? It's also why I ended up liking. I will say when they moved to New Orleans, the only good thing about when they moved to New Orleans is when they modified the logo. Into the Florida Lee and change it to the Florida B. I like that. I thought that was cool. I have a t-shirt with that on it, sure. Which is now vintage. I now have a vintage t-shirt because I have two. I have a Bobcat shirt and a Hornet shirt, and a New Orleans Hornet shirt. And I realized I bought these like 3 years ago, and now they're all vintage of these teams that no longer exist. So Nets off season.
Nets off season.
They spent some money.
Speaking of buying stuff.
Speaking of buying stuff,
they bought some things. They bought, their payroll or their luxury tax bill is what, like $87 million this year on top of the $100 million they're going to spend in salary, which is pretty much more than, just the luxury tax bill alone is almost more than every team in the league. Like, I think the Knicks will have a higher salary, but other than that, like, it's pretty much just throwing money around. I mean, they're making it rain in the NBA.
Here's a good way to think about it. The Warriors recently got valued at $800 million.
Yes.
So the Nets this season in luxury tax are paying over 10% of the Warriors' net worth.
That's a lot.
That's a crazy number to me. How can you possibly have? And it's really weird. I mean, they're gonna make it. That's the thing. It's worth it. I have a really hard time defending my whole small markets are okay thing when you look at the amount of money these big markets make. They just make absurd amounts of money.
They really do. I mean, but I don't even think that's a hey, look how much money Brooklyn moves in, like pulls in. I think that's their owner. I think he could own the Cleveland Cavaliers and he would spend this money. Like I kind of think he's just a crazy, like competitive guy. Like money is, I mean, cause what's he worth? Like $8, $9, $10, $16 billion, something like that. Like $87 million tax payment from him. Like that's nothing to him,
which is, I always joke that it's his couch change.
It is that's an insane amount of money to almost everybody in the world. But to him, that's nothing. And so that's why they're doing it. I think with his case, it's not market size. I think he could own anywhere, and he's just going to throw that kind of money around because he can.
As of March 2013, he is worth $13 billion, according to Wikipedia.
That's a lot of hooch. I mean, that's with the Knicks and with the Lakers, I think market drives them. Like drives their ability to spend luxury tax dollars and all that when the Lakers think they're competing for a title, they'll spend that. But for Brooklyn, I don't think it's about market size. I think it's just Prokhorov likes to shell out the money.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if he changes. If it gets to be not even necessarily like he'll make enough. I think they were one of the teams that was. Were they valued at a billion by Forbes? I can't remember.
If they weren't, it was very close.
Right. So, but it'll be interesting to see if it ever reaches a point where he's like, well, I do want a little bit more clearance on the profit sheet to see whether or not it has any sort of impact. Or if he's just like, nope, don't care. Don't care.
I feel like we kind of thought that way about Mark Cuban for a long time, you know?
I honestly imagine that the Kirilenko deal was in part – like I imagine it being Kirilenko is like said, I will play for this little amount to you and Prokhorov, like let's move away from the jokes about him paying him stuff on the side and let's move it to like I imagine Prokhorov being like, no, I want to pay you more. Like
and Kirilenko's agent had to like explain like, no, there are rules in place to where this is the most you can offer us. And he's like, no, there's got to be more we can do.
Like. And then maybe that's where it started coming in. No, I'll buy you a small country. Can I buy you a small country? Let me buy you a small country. I mean, yeah. So I talked about this before. They're going to be great. I said in the off-season review I think they can win 55 games. I wouldn't be shocked if they won 57 and got the 2 seed. That wouldn't stun me.
Yeah, I think the Pacers are the second best team in the East, but that doesn't always mean they'll have the second best record.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure that out because I'm doing the thing I always say you should never do, which is I'm taking results and trying to work backwards. I'm taking the results of, okay, I thought the Pacers were the second best team, and they were. So why are they not the 2 seed? And I've started going back and being like, well, you know, they lost a bunch of games in really stupid manners. Like David West threw a half court inbounds pass versus the Raptors, which was like the dumbest pass I've ever seen. They had a lot of games where somebody would hit just ridiculously stupid shots against them, all these kind of things. But then you're like, well, the Pacers also don't have anything to prove. Like, they don't really need to. After you make a top four seed and you make a run at the title, after you make a conference finals, there's a little bit of the, you know, we don't really need to do this. We don't really need to get a top seed. We need to be healthy. That's the big thing. Versus the Nets, I think I want to make a statement, even though they were top four last year, they were only, I think, technically top four. Nobody feels that they were a top four team. So I think that they probably want to have that big, massive year. And a lot of that will depend on how much they rest Garnett and Pierce.
Right. And for them, it's just going to become like, how do they pace themselves during the season? I mean, Garnett and Pierce couldn't really pace themselves with the Celtics because there just wasn't the help. Like, you can say, oh, they had depth with Jeff Green, or oh, they had depth, you know, they could bring in Brandon Bass and Jared Soldier. Like, they're just, even before the injuries, like, they didn't have that kind of luxury because the team wasn't talented enough to really be successful without those two guys playing heavy minutes. And now they don't need that because there's plenty of depth. I mean, you can get away with a Brook Lopez, Andre Blatch tandem inside. Like, you can get away with running out just a smaller lineup, or, you know, throwing Joe Johnson to the three, and or now you've got Kirilenko who can play the three and the four. Like, there's just so many options they have now that I am curious to see how Jason Kidd handles it, because this is, you know, Kidd's job. Like, he'll have a lot of influence from Lawrence Frank, but, you know, Jason Kidd is probably the biggest question mark they have from what they've done this offseason, right?
Right. I guess that, you know, you know, I do a lot of preaching about the internet on here, but one thing I want to make clear is this bugs me a lot. If I start mentioning something I'm, like, concerned with or something that might happen, it doesn't mean that it will. I also don't need you to point out why it won't. I know why it won't, but I have reasons to believe that it's possible. So, like, part of it for me is I worry about Garnett and Brook Lopez a little bit. That concerns me a little bit from a chemistry standpoint, from a relationship standpoint, from an attitude standpoint. I really don't want to see Lopez get discouraged or take a step backwards or feel weird on this team. He was so good last year, and then he needs to be a big part of what they do going forward. And I don't want to see that kind of mess with, because KG's nuts, but KG's also really supportive of his teammates. So maybe it'll work out.
Yeah, I think KG and Lopez will most likely be fine. Like, I think there will be times of frustration. I mean, we saw with almost any team, you see times of frustration throughout a regular season, right? I mean, we even saw it with if everyone freaked out about it when LeBron and Wade seemed to be, like, kind of frustrated with either Bosch or with Eric Spoelstra or with each other, you know, when they first came together in Miami, when people weren't just rolling over for them. And everyone freaked out, and then by the end, like, they didn't win the title, but they kind of got it together, right?
Right.
And I think that on a smaller scale, you'll see that. Like, there are going to be times where Lopez doesn't do what he's supposed to do defensively, and KG's going to bark at him for doing it. And I think it'll be, you know, how well that situation works out will be, one, the direction and the leadership of the coaching staff, and two, how much Brook Lopez is into taking that as constructive criticism rather than just criticism.
How much do you like getting yelled at?
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, some people are fine with, like, some people want to go play for Bobby Knight.
Right.
Like, some people think that is what will make them a great basketball player, is that kind of harsh criticism. Some people can't handle it, and it doesn't mean that person isn't good enough to be a great basketball player. It's just, you know, personalities are different. And I actually think Lopez will be receptive to it. because I think he understands that with his contract and with expectations and with the team's expectations, like, I think we saw him last year really strive to be a great player and try and do, you know, he was never much of a defender, but he was, he at least like was protecting the rim last year. Like, I think you saw effort from him. I think he wants to get better, and he isn't just happy with the contract, and he wants to be, I legitimately believe he wants to be the best center in the league. Now, I don't think he can actually be the best center in the league, but I think he'll soak in what KG and what Pierce try to teach him defensively.
What role do you think Joe Johnson needs to play with this team?
That's a good question. I think I like him as a secondary ball handler, and I like him as kind of your fourth quarter guy. I don't know how much you have to go to him throughout the course of the game to get him primed for that situation.
They did a little of this last year. When they were in the side pick and roll with Darren and him, it was really good.
Yeah, he's an excellent side pick and roll player.
It was really good. I wish they would run that more. I have concerns about Pierce and whether or not he's going to make this transition okay. I think that
– yeah.
Well, one, I think that if you watched him during the press conference, if you read the interviews, there is so much of Paul Pierce trying to talk himself into this stuff. Like, I read an interview with him the other day that was saying how he's – he's saying, well, I need to embrace the big city, so I've been getting out more and getting the feel of it and really getting excited about it. And you can just tell that it's a guy trying to make a situation he didn't really want to be in okay. And that's not to say that he doesn't think the Nets are a good team or that he was not the one that called KG to convince the trade. I'm sure he did, because Pierce is a smart guy and he understood, look, I'm not done. If I'm done, I can walk away. I'm not done. I want to keep playing. I don't want to be on a crappy team. I don't have any choice here. Boston's not going to be a contender. I don't have any choice. So I might as well go somewhere where I can keep winning and still make the money that I'm owed. And so he went that route, and it's good. But I still think that there's a lot of, you know, he really shouldn't be handling the ball in this situation, which is a big difference from where he's been. He's been – and a lot of times, the primary ball handler in Boston, even with Rondo, they'd run a lot of sets where Pierce would at least explore and probe off the dribble before kind of, you know, resetting the offense. And I don't think you can do that with him anymore. I don't think he's in that position physically to be able to do that. And he certainly shouldn't do it when you've got Darren Williams and Joe Johnson, who are considerably younger.
Here's my question is, and maybe it's a two-part question. Do you think Pierce will be a much more effective scorer just based on the options he'll have around him that kind of help him spread the floor? And it's not so much him taking on, you know, half of the defense at once. Do you think he's in a position to where, like, he's good enough to where having better weapons on the floor, which he'll have than he had in Boston, will help him score better?
I think he'll make a lot of important shots for them.
Okay.
Is how I would describe it.
And then my second question is, how do you handle the balance between him and Joe Johnson? Like, who is your... Because I think we both agree Darren and Brooke should be your 1-2 punch, right?
Yeah.
Who's the third scorer on that team? Or does it matter? Well, here's the thing. It will matter to those guys. So I guess who do you pick?
God, it's tough. I honestly run the pick and pop with Darren and KG, and then have Johnson and Pierce space the floor, yeah, and use them that way. That's how I do it.
Can you run a nice like pick and pop 2-man game with Johnson and Pierce? Do you think that would work? That just came into my head, and I'm trying to think. Like,
I don't think so, because one of the things is
well, Pierce's not going to set a screen. I think Pierce would go up to set the screen and then just kind of like sidestep to be next to Joe and just be like, hey, just hand me the ball.
Here, just get, take it. I don't, because one, I've seen Pierce has gotten a weird kind of hitch when he catches.
Yeah.
He used to be able to just catch and immediately go into his motion. And now it's like he catches and then plants, and it's like his knee goes, ow. And he kind of hesitates for just a second.
Yeah, and it might be harder for him to square up now. That's a good point.
Yeah, I think that's kind of it. Versus, and I guess theoretically you could do it with Pierce and Johnson, but I think in that situation I'm doubling hard on Pierce and forcing a pass that's going to be difficult because he can't, you know, Pierce can't jump up and do a big old jump pass to get over that double. I don't know though. I think I will say this. One thing that could be interesting is if they're able to space the floor adequately to allow Pierce to post. I think he could be pretty good at the elbow and in the post against certain guards and forwards. Because part of it is Johnson's so big that you can't play – like whoever your small guy is going to be in a really rough position versus this team. This is a big team.
Yeah. There is a lot of size on that team.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, Pierce is 6'6". And not that I'm looking this up or anything, but Johnson's 6'8", right? So if you're playing those two in a lineup together, and you've got a wing that's 6'4", who are you putting them on? You know, who are you? Like, here's a good example. What are the Celtics doing?
Yeah.
Jeff Green's probably taking Pierce, but then are you having Avery Bradley check Joe Johnson? Because then you got little Avery Bradley checking 6'8" Joe.
What do you think they brought in Dante Green for?
Yeah, he'll definitely be around when those two face off in the regular season. So I mean, they've got some interesting things they can do. You know, I talked about this immediately after the Kirilenko signing, but which I probably revisited. I mean, I'm still of the opinion that you bring Terry and Pierce off the bench and you start Eric Kirilenko. They're not going to do it, but I still think that's what you do. I still think that your best lineup is Darren, Joe Johnson, Kirilenko, Garnett, Brook Lopez. I don't want to F with that team whatsoever. That team terrifies me.
Yeah, that's a good defensive team.
Like Pierce, if Pierce is on the floor, I'm almost isolating whoever my wing guy is. Whoever my most talented wing ball handler is, I'm making sure that whoever Pierce is guarding is going to get an opportunity to take him in order to force the defense to adjust and then kick.
Or if your point guard is your best scorer, I think you're putting them in a pick and roll with Pierce's man to try to get a switch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're attacking that kind of
nonstop. Part of it also is that it's Pierce's pride. I've seen Pierce in games call off help, saying, "No, I got it," and you don't got it.
They're like, no, you really don't. Like, let's just come over there and help.
Like, no, don't worry about it. Back off. Pierce, Paul, I really gotta insist.
Okay, but isn't this like a nice problem to have though, where you're trying to figure out, like, Pierce is kind of a problem for, like, if Pierce is your problem on the team, like, that's not a bad team.
You're great.
Yeah, that's the thing. And it's trying to figure out just how good, like.
The only thing that derails this team is injuries. That's the only thing that derails them. I don't think that they're a contender because I don't think they have a gear. I don't think they have a championship gear.
What do you mean by that?
I think that you have to have a team able to operate. They have to hit that certain mode where they're able to be so intense and so high execution that they're able to play at a championship caliber. And I think that in order to do that, if Garnett and Pierce were 3 years younger, I absolutely think that you're there. But they're not. They're 3 years older. And I think that causes a lot of problems. I think the guys that have that gear in them can't hit it anymore, and the rest of the guys, the only way that they're going to get brought up to that level is if they have somebody who can take them there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get that.
I don't think Darren hasn't showed me that he can hit that level, and until he does, I have to doubt it. And Joe Johnson has been the best player on a playoff team that was defined by its mediocrity. So I think it's easy to kind of make that statement for Joe. Now, I love Joe's work in 2008 versus the Celtics. That was awesome. And he's had some big playoff games, but I've never seen him just be an absolute monster and takeover. And certainly last season, though most of the last season was a plantar fasciitis for him.
Yeah.
So then you're looking at Brook Lopez, and I don't think anybody on that team is going to let Brook Lopez be that guy. And then you've also got, I think, the concern as far as injuries go. You've got Brook Lopez's foot, Kevin Garnett's everything, Paul Pierce's knee and shoulder – Darren's various issues last year and Joe Johnson's foot. So you've got listed injuries you can go with all five guys. Now there's a lot of those, but this team has bigger. I think you worry that they're going to get hit with a smattering of injuries. They could really. They have to make sure that they're healthy. They have to take most of April off. They have to get a top three locked up by April 6th-ish.
That might be,
in order to be able to coast.
That might be hard to do, though. I mean, Heat will be there. Pacers Bulls. I still think the Knicks can be a great regular season team. Like, that's no easy thing to just say, hey, what, get a top three seed by early April and try to work out the next 2 weeks.
I think if the Knicks are in the four spot, you can go ahead and drift. I think the Nets could use playing New York. I think it'd be good for them as a franchise and as a team. If they face them in a first round series, one, it's going to be a lot of fun. Two, it's going to be the most hyped series that we've seen in years since Boston LA. And three, you beat New York in a first round series and send them home. That Prokhorov is going to give you all of the bonus money in existence. He will. There will be rivers of champagne flowing through Brooklyn into your mouth if you're able to do that. So, I don't know. Do you think that they can hit championship level? Let's say let's take the big caveat out of this. Let's say that LeBron is abducted by his home people and taken back to his planet, or Wade tear something or Bosch tear something, God forbid. Let's say that the Heat are out of the picture. And it's Indiana, Chicago, Brooklyn. Can Brooklyn not just win the East, can they win a title?
I have a hard time thinking that they'll get by Chicago and Indiana. Not on a talent standpoint, but just we don't know what kind of coach Jason Kidd's going to be. And like the system they're going to... Like, I would just think like... We're going to see a lot of Lawrence Frank stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's kind of a safe assumption because we don't know what to think of Kidd. Like, I think Kidd is likely to be a good coach early on within the next...
He's going to be assistants like any young coach does, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of look at it the same way I look at Mark Jackson hiring when he was hired. Like, people freaked out about it. I said, I don't know if he's going to be good or bad, but I know he was a really smart player. And I think that translates... pretty decently. And that's how I feel about Kidd. Like, he was a brilliant player. You know, he was a savant. Like, I think that eventually he'll figure out the coaching thing within the next couple of years. But you're going against two systems that are established and that players buy into. And not that the Nets won't necessarily buy into what they're doing, but will they have enough time to make it a legitimate weapon in the first year? Like, we know they'll have the talent, but will they have the discipline within what they're trying to run to get that, to combat a very good Bulls defensive system, an excellent Pacers defensive system? You know, like, how will they, even with the talent, like, how do you score in that against those systems?
Brooklyn lost in maybe the worst way that you can in the first round.
Yeah.
Because...
losing a Game 7 on your home floor to a battered team? Yeah.
Well, it's not... That's bad, right? But they lost on their home floor in a Game 7 to a battered team, and that's like... It seems like an understatement. But the big takeaway was they just didn't try hard enough. That was what everyone kind of came to, is that they didn't... Whatever that undefinable characteristic of heart is that comes across on television to us, that's what everyone kind of felt, was, man, that team just did not have the heart to overcome this versus the Bulls, which are 80% heart, 20% talent last year. Like, that was kind of where they were at by the time that those injuries were taken care of them. They lost so many guys. The question is, can Kidd, Garnett, Pierce, is that enough to fix that problem? Can you completely change that identity with those three guys, with where they're at in their careers?
Eventually, yes. Right away, I have no idea.
Well, see, and part of the issue with the right away thing is they don't have, like, this window is tight.
Oh, sure. Very tight.
They got this year and they got next year, and then things get tricky.
But all they got to do is figure it out by next year.
Yeah.
Like, I think we've seen that with teams that come together.
Maybe that's the gap. Maybe you take this year, you get the new culture instilled, you work out the kinks, you figure out if all these guys are who you need, and if this thing works, and then when, let's say LeBron leaves, you got a window.
Yeah, you got a window, and let's look at the Heat, and not even the 2011 Heat. Let's look at the 2005 Heat. Shaq comes to Miami. They take a year, and then the next year they're champs. And whatever reason you think they became champs, it doesn't matter. Like, they figured it out enough to become the champs. And then you look at the Celtics. They were kind of an outlier in the sense that they came together and won it in the first year.
Right.
The Lakers, I think you can say in that same breath, you know, they came together once they got Gasol that year. They got to the finals, but it took them a little bit to kind of find that inner drive as a team to put it together, and then they won the next 2 years. And then we saw the Miami Heat of 2011, you know, need a year to really realize their championship potential. Like, I think that year buffer is probably more of a legitimate thing than we kind of recognize on the whole.
By the way, that 2005 Heat team, Christian Laettner played 49 games for them at age 35.
Sure.
He averaged 5 points a game. Wade averaged 24.57 that season.
I'll just say it. He's a Hall of Famer.
He is, man. He's so good.
He's really good.
I mean, I assume you like bringing back Blatch.
Yeah, I think you know, the talent's fine, and until he becomes a problem again, if he becomes a problem again, I think as long as he's not one of your main guys, he's a role player, and he's content on making, like, he seems content on making the Wizards look bad for intelligently giving up on him. And I think that change of scenery is needed for all things to work out.
Are you ready to put the tombstone on Jason Terry? You were done with him last year. Is it done?
Oh, it's zombie Terry all the way.
It's completely over.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, like, he's got to start hitting shots. If he starts hitting shots, I'll believe in a resurrection. But he's dead to me right now. He's been so bad.
It was really weird last year because I would watch a lot of Mavericks games where I'd be like, God, Terry can't hit anything. And then the biggest shot of the game,
you mean,
was like,
you mean Celtics,
automatic.
Celtics games, right?
What?
Celtics games?
No, I meant like Matt. I meant previously in previous.
Oh,
years.
Gotcha.
Yeah, like when he was with the Mavericks, I would watch him and say, God, he can't hit anything. And then he would hit like the biggest shot of the game. And then with the Celtics, I would say, God, he can't hit anything. But then he would have like there'd be an open look, and the crowd's getting excited, and it's gonna cut it to a 2-point lead. No, like badly misses, and you're just like, oh God, like he's lost the ability, you know. Everyone talks about Chauncey Billups and Mr. Big Shot. Jason Terry was that for the last couple of years.
Yeah,
he was one of those guys I would have taken.
That Dirk Terry like pick and pop was just killer, and not just because Dirk was so great, but Terry was just awesome in that situation.
He would make you hate your life if you were on the other side.
Yeah,
you just watch fans go, ah, God. I'm sure that Spurs fans can kind of attest to that.
I've got a question for you. And I know we're going to be rooting for him and high on him because we like him and because he had the devastating knee injury. Do you think Sean Livingston is a good backup point guard for them? I know we want him to be, and I know he's not a bad player, especially at backup role.
I do. I watched him a lot last year. It's really, really weird because I tend to be much more harsh towards guys with knee injuries. Not from the perspective of I don't feel bad for them. I do, and it's horrible. And I've tried to focus on the fact that they've actually had to go through pain too. Like what Sean Livingston went through was an excruciating amount of pain. At the same time, I try and be like, look, you blew out one of the things that you cannot survive without in basketball. Like you have to have a functioning knee. You underwent severe trauma. Let's not think that he's going to be fine. But with Livingston, I really like the way that he's adjusted his game. He makes a lot of smart passes.
Yeah.
He does a lot of smart things. I think especially on this team, they're going to have so many ball handlers. Because if Pierce – we talked about Pierce, but Pierce is still a better ball handler as a secondary option than so many teams have in this league. I mean, I would – I would give a lot to get Paul Pierce on the Grizzlies. It would just fix – I'm not saying I would name my daughter Paula. I'm just saying I wouldn't not. I would put it on the list.
Sure.
Even though I don't like the name Paula at all. I would do that just to get him on the Grizzlies because he fits so much of what they do. At the same time – so I think Livingston doesn't necessarily have to be – he doesn't have to, like, run an offense. And if all he does is take the ball down, give it to Blatch or Lopez in the post, sit in the corner and make a few backdoor cuts or run a few pick-and-pops with Blatch, fill in some time, I think he's going to be totally okay. I loved what C.J. Watson brought them last year.
Yeah,
right up until he missed that.
He was really good.
Yeah, up until he missed that layup. That
was, oh, my God.
Until he missed the layup that ended their season. It's really weird to be able to go back. It's like the Raheem Morris – I'm in Broncos country, so I've heard a lot about it. The Raheem Morris play on the ball when he should have just been tackling the guy versus the Ravens in that AFC game.
Yeah.
Where why on earth would you possibly – that one play single-handedly lost them the game. It's even more nuts because C.J. Watson missing that layup literally lost them. Like, if you look at it, you can really trace everything back to that moment as when the Nets lost that series.
That's crazy.
Isn't it?
I mean, yeah, what – I mean, what? So they go on – well, they go on to play the Heat. What do they do against the Heat? Maybe win a game?
Probably less. I think that the Bulls taking that first game was a real upset. I don't – the Nets – you know, I was talking about the regular season and you consider a lot of stuff, but look, I mean, the Nets, they got up for those games and the Heat toyed with them and then just destroyed them. I mean, it was, I just watched the Avengers. It was like watching those big aliens wipe out buildings. It was just massive destruction everywhere. Or it was like the Hulk smashing Loki into the ground. That's what it was like. Was low, you know, the Nets are Loki talking at him, and then just the Heat just smash, 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 smash. It was disgusting. So I don't think they would have even won a game, but they're not embarrassed if they don't bow out in the first round. I don't think.
Yeah.
And Watson may have come back if they've gotten out of the first round.
Do you think that we would view them differently if they had made it past the first round?
Yeah, I would have said. Especially if they lost in the first round. Let's say that they lost in the first round and still their offseason played out the way that it did. They hired Kidd. They got Garnett and Pierce. Let's say that happened anyway. Then it's all of a sudden it's not, wow, what a disaster. They really tried to correct it by bringing in these smart, tough veterans. Then it's they had an okay season. They realized they didn't have enough. They got bigger guns. Now maybe they're ready. It seems like a continuation of success versus a, well, God, that fell apart.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Livingston is definitely a downgrade from Watson, but everything else is such an upgrade that it's acceptable.
Yeah, that's true. And, I mean, you do have so many guys who can handle the ball. And you know, Livingston, if he's just out there for 10 to 15 minutes a night to give Darren a break, you're still a really big team, like with just all that length.
There are going to be moments, though, I think, when Andre Kirilenko's out there and he looks around and realizes the lineup is Sean Livingston, Jason Terry, him, Andre Blatch, and Mason Plumlee.
Mason, I don't think Mason Plumlee's even given a uniform this year. I like him, and I think he'll be a decent pro, but I don't think he's...
Worried about him. I wrote this in the preview. I'm so scared KG's going to hurt him.
He might get legitimately Rick Rickarded.
I'm so scared that KG's going to bite him. Just, like, take a bite out of his shoulder, and he just looks down and goes, oh, God! And, like, you see the bone.
No, if anything, KG will hit him with, like, a mace.
Ugh.
Like one of those medieval maces.
I'm just really worried about it. I want him to be okay. I want Mason Plumlee to be okay. Someone take care of Mason Plumlee. What do you think about that, actually? Do you think he gets any time? I mean, he's got it, right? They don't have a backup. Who's their backup center? Well, I guess I always forget. They kept Evans, right? Yeah, they kept Evans. They got rid of Brooks.
Yes, Evans on the team. Yeah, I mean, I think Evans and Blatch are your backup centers, and even KG at times. There's no reason for Mason Plumlee to play this year,
except for hilarity.
Sure, I like him. I think he's a good. I think he's going to be a solid third big man.
You know what's weird? There are exceptions. There's guys that you don't that you specifically like point out and don't like. Usually wings that can't dribble. You like a lot of. You're very high on rookies. You're real low on pros. It's an interesting.
No,
kind of
generalization. No. I'm not high on them as rookies. I think they're going to be terrible rookies, but I just like them long term.
Right. No, I mean, just like in the draft, you feel very positively about many of the players that are on boards. You just are.
It depends on where they end up. I mean, I think that I think for athletic bigs who like to run the floor and try to dunk, like your Cody Zellers and your Lucas Nogueira and your and Mason Plumlee, like. I think those guys just kind of fit into this league. It doesn't mean I think they're going to be starters. I just think they can be rotation guys.
Do you know Josh Childress was on that team last year?
On purpose? Wait, on the Nets?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound right.
He played in 14 games. 14 games, 14 points. 21 shots.
No, that's gotta be a glitch.
I will tell this. So the Euro question is always kind of a really complicated one. I think that if you generalize all Euros, that's one, xenophobia, and two, it's a bad way to go about analyzing basketball. Like you need to get to know these guys and watch them. At the same token, don't get overly excited either just because somebody looked really good in certain situations.
Right.
Kolodovic last year was bad. Bad. Just bad. It was not good. And there was lots of talk from the Nets bloggers about, oh, he could really be an impact, with him coming off the bench. And I was like, well, we don't know if he's going to be any good. And then he was bad. So
I like his shooting form. I think he could be a good guy to stretch the floor for a few minutes each game. He didn't shoot that well. I think he was under league average last year from three-point range. But I like his form. And I think that playing – if he does happen to get minutes in this current rotation, just to stretch the floor, I like him playing with guys like KG and Pierce and Kirilenko. I think they'll be able to find him in the corners and at the wing and really make him get him good shots. But in terms of like impact past that, I'm not big on him.
I just realized that the Nets can roll out a closing defensive and offensive, honestly, lineup of Darren Williams, Joe Johnson, Andre Kirilenko, Reggie Evans, and Kevin Garnett. Holy crap.
It's not a bad defensive team if Darren decides to play defense.
God, they can – and they can – it's going to be like the Celtics, only they can rebound.
Right.
Exactly. The Celtics, only they can rebound and shoot. This is amazing. You can talk yourself into this team really easy.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's just – it's talking – like they're an excellent team. They'll be one of the better teams in the league. It's just, do I think they can win a title? Because this team's built to win a title, right?
Right.
And I don't see them being able to beat the Heat unless there's a massive injury to Miami. And I just don't know. I don't know that I like Lawrence Frank's systems against the Pacers and the Bulls. I just don't know that there's enough movement. I don't know there's enough. Just smart positioning on defense, but you know they'll probably tweak that quite a bit. You give him an
it's
A,
really
right? Yeah, you gave him an A.
Yeah, I gave him an A. They've had a really interesting offseason, and maybe it's just because we've talked a lot about it. I found myself writing the offseason report and was largely kind of like, they are what they are. Like, you know, like they're going to be good. The end. That's pretty much what I got. I think that there might be bigger ceilings for other teams. But again, you can talk yourself into it. Like if Garnett comes out and if playing limited minutes and him getting really focused pays off, and if Pierce being able to not have to handle a huge load, that really boosts him. And if Darren gets healthy, I'm getting ready to write about this. Darren gets healthy. There is still maybe not a player that this is such a massive year for him.
Yeah.
And he's got such a great opportunity. And there's it's a huge opportunity for him, but it's also there are no more excuses. You're not in Utah anymore. You're not playing with, you know, Mehmet Okur is like your third best player. I like Mehmet Okur, but still. you know, you're in Brooklyn. You got the market you want. You've got a top five center, a top five power forward, top 15 small forward. You've got...
Well, I don't know that KG's a top five power forward anymore.
Really?
I mean, really? I think there are quite a few guys that are better than him.
The childhood you is pretty mad right now.
He's 40. Well, he's 36 or 37. But he's like... He just doesn't do anything on offense anymore other than shoot jumpers.
Love, LaMarcus Aldridge.
Zebo. Dirk. Zebo.
Dirk. We won't count Tim Duncan for purposes here. David West?
Yeah, I would say West is above him.
Okay.
Blake Griffin's above him.
Wow.
That can't be it. I think Blake Griffin's impact on offense is more... Like, I don't think KG was good on defense last year. He wasn't bad.
Celtics fans are going to be all up in your business.
Oh, like I give a damn. Talk to me in 5 years when your team's relevant again.
The on-off numbers last year were pretty compelling. I don't like using one metric, but that was a pretty good one.
I guess part of it
with the offense is just that, you know, it's like he can only do one thing, but he does the one thing so well, and no one guards him. I don't know why.
And he'll be good in his role.
That's what I've never understood. I don't understand why guarding Kevin Garnett has become difficult. Like, he's screening. Guess what? He's going to roll to his left. He's going to take four steps to his left, catch and shoot. Just take four steps to your right. Spencer Hawes, I'm talking to you.
Yeah, he's still a top 10 power forward, but there are guys that are clearly better than him. Like, there are at least five guys that are clearly better than him. I think you can make the case for Blake Griffin, for sure.
Would you feel comfortable top 10?
Yeah, he's definitely top 10.
Okay, he's definitely top 10. So you got a top 5 center, a top 10 power forward, a top 15 small forward?
I don't know. Sure, why not?
Well, I guess let's say Kirilenko. Is Kirilenko top 15 small forward?
Yeah, I guess so. Let's just combine the two.
You can make the argument he's got two top 10 or top 15 small forwards. Regardless, he's got then Joe Johnson top. I mean, it's a weak position. I guess top 10?
He's definitely a top 10 shooting guard.
Okay, top 10 shooting guard and yourself. He's got weapons at the wazoo. So Darren's got a – he has to be great this year. This has to be a year where his numbers look amazing and he looks like a team leader. That's going to be a big thing is he going to be able to show Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett they can trust him?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, if he plays like he did last year, no.
Right.
If he plays like he did in Utah, I mean, I know he was good the last, 2 months of the regular season, but wasn't impressed with him in the playoffs. And it's been such a drop-off since he left Utah. And that's not to say he hasn't been like all-star worthy or he hasn't been good. It's just he hasn't been great. And that's the thing. It's like people say, oh, he's still like, look what he's doing. He's still putting up these numbers. He's still playing well. I was like, yeah, he's playing well. But we've seen so much better out of him. We've seen him challenge Chris Paul for the best point guard in the NBA. And you don't see that anymore. Ever. Not even in that stretch last year where he played so well. And that's the question. Is that when does that come back? I think it can. I don't think it's a lost cause, but when does it, if at all? That's my question for him. And I don't know that there's an answer other than he just has to play that way. Because you know he's capable. He's damn talented.
Big year. Big year for him. A lot of questions.
In 2015-16, I don't know why this became a weird, something I was interested in. 2015-16 season, that backcourt in Brooklyn is getting paid a combined $45.8 million. Jesus. Just the backcourt. Joe Johnson and Darren Williams.
I would make fun of them, and I was all like, they're just going to overpay, and you can't just spend money, and it's going to, you know, they're going to get trapped and all these things. And then they got this Garnett Pierce deal, and now I'm like, man, they just make things happen. They just, Prokhorov just makes things happen. I don't know how.
And let's, let's just squash this before it even starts trickling into our Twitter feeds. Billy King's still a bad GM.
Yeah.
He's lucky enough that he has an owner who is throwing money at the situation.
If you have an unlimited pocketbook, you tend to do pretty well.
Right. It's not hard to find contracts that guys are trying to unload.
Right.
And I still think Billy King is a really bad GM. But luckily, Prokhorov is kind of negating that because it's a blank check. It's a blank gold check.
It's nice because so many other teams, like every blogger that I read talks about, man, this hurt their flexibility and they need to make sure they keep their options open. Like, this is going to get really tight. And Nets fans just don't have to worry about it. Just like, no, that's cool. We got Joe Johnson on this huge contract. No biggie. Nothing. We're paying $87 million in luxury tax. That's all right. It's his money, not mine. Like, the Nets fans are able to demand of their owners what I tend to think that fans shouldn't, that they should not demand, that their owners just completely disregard the business results. But again, they're also making hand over fist because of Barclays. That's the thing, is you can't even be like, well, sure, they're a contending team, but this isn't sustainable because they're not making enough money. They're making oodles of money. Oodles and oodles of money.
Lots of money.
So much money.
Whether it's enough to break even, I don't know, but doesn't matter. Dude's worth $13 billion. He made it all in medals and acid-washed jeans.
We'll go over this again when we do preseason stuff. I am going to ask you right now. The Bucks signed Larry Sanders.
Yeah. Didn't we talk about that?
Yeah, we already did, but they made it official. I'm going to, right now, gut instinct, who wins the Atlantic Division?
Might take Brooklyn a little time to... Well, I was going to say it might take Brooklyn a little time to get things together, which could slow them down. But we already know the Knicks are going to be up and down all season, so I don't think that matters. I'll go Brooklyn. I think Brooklyn gets the 3 seed.
I think Brooklyn wins the division and wins it by 4 games.
Yeah, that wouldn't shock me.
53-49. 53 wins to 49 wins.
I think this Knicks team's a 50-win team.
I have to believe that some point, like, there's got to be a – it's not really a regression to the mean, but I feel like things got to even out between how unreasonably good they were in the first and last months of the season. One of those surely can't come true this year. Like – they can't go on these ridiculous shooting streaks in November and April twice.
Why not? You do not like guys that get hot.
I guess I don't.
You really don't. You take it as like this like attack against basketball. Like, this has always happened.
I take it as an assault on perceptions based on the fact that I like the average. I like, what are you able to consistently do versus...
They consistently hit a ton of threes.
They don't, though.
They do. That 2 months did not get them the all-time record for a season. They hit 891 threes.
That November was really crazy, though.
They hit 891 threes. I don't see how this is like... Oh,
I'm saying they're gonna win. I'm saying they're gonna win 49 games. I'm not saying they're gonna be bad.
No, I'm more annoyed at the lack of respect for their three-point shooting.
You and I are on such diametric opposites of this thing.
I'm looking up their splits right now.
Yeah, I'm on there too. I'm going to get embarrassed by this. I mean, look, they made 11.7, 11, 10.2, 10.3, 10, and then 12. Their highest months were there, but they only made 0.7 more in November than they did in December.
Yeah,
they only made 1.7 more or 1.5 more in January than they did in November. That's only a 3 game.
Here's the thing. In February, they shot 30 a game. Oh, my God. That's so many.
Uh-huh.
I have no problem with that, though.
I know.
Chuck him if you got him.
Well, I think part of it is I don't – like, with the Rockets, I didn't mind it. I actually don't mind guys that shoot really hot if I feel like they're working for high percentage stuff. And you talked a lot about the selfish ball movement and stuff like that. I just always feel like teams like the Rockets and the Magic when they had Dwight, like those teams position themselves to be able to create good threes, and I feel like the Knicks just kind of shot them.
Here's the thing. November for the Rockets, they hit 9 a game, 10.5 in December, 10.6 in January, 12.1 in February, 11 in March, 10.4 in April. So all they did
hot,
was
but they got better and then like bursted through. Versus they have one hot month and a hot month to end.
But that's not what happened.
A part of it also is
they're almost equal in the distribution. It just happened at different times of the year.
And that matters to me.
Why? That doesn't make any sense to me.
I don't know why. Because I'm a Knicks hater. That's the answer there.
That's what I was looking for.
Because I'm a Knicks hater. That's it.
This segment isn't brought to you by the Real GM Knicks board.
Exactly. So you think that they can be that good offensively again? Here's a big question, though. How much of it was Kidd?
Yeah, that's a good question. That I don't know.
A lot of it in November was Kidd. A lot of it in April was just JR and Melo doing their thing.
But I also wonder how much of that was in the middle of the season. Tyson Chandler is banged up. Like, that Knicks team was pretty banged up last year.
Yeah.
And I do, and like, they lost Felton, I think, in December, right? Maybe December, January, something, somewhere around there. And yeah, I think that hurt. I think if this team is relatively healthy, I just like their spacing. And I think that they can, I don't know about if they'll be the third best defense or third best offense in the league, but top six, I think that's doable.
I definitely think they'll be top six. Melo will get them there. That's what's crazy is Melo's consistently been on really high efficiency offenses.
He draws the attention. I'm all in on this theory. I have nothing to back it up, but I am all in on this theory.
I guess part of it, I am going to be adamant about this. When he goes off a torrential downpour in April, I'm not buying in this time. I'm still so mad at myself over picking them over the Pacers. I cannot forgive myself for that. I knew that was nothing real. I knew there was nothing real about it, and I bought it. Because that's the thing. If they'd shot in November the way that they had for the rest of the season, you and I would probably be in line in terms of me being just like, you know, well, they're just a really good offensive team, and they were consistently good. It's the fact that they were so far above what they did during that middle 3 months of the season that makes me want to dismiss it completely, and you can't. Like, I know that. You can't dismiss it completely, but it creates this revulsion in me where I'm like, hey, they had a hot month. That's great, but that's not who they really are. That 3 months in the middle is who they really are, and I still kind of believe that. I think even with the injuries, that's more representative of who they are.
So yeah,
that's backed up a little bit, I think, by the playoffs.
They were also quite injured in the playoffs, but okay.
Everyone's injured. You know this. You're a Timberwolves fan.
Yeah, but not everyone's injured to keep them out of the playoffs. That's the only thing I know as a Timberwolves fan.
One more question. Who wins the Battle of New York this year?
I don't even know what that means.
Who wins the season series between the Nets and the Knicks?
They'd probably split it 2-2.
You think?
Yeah, why not? I don't know. I don't care. Like, I was ready to end this, but let's talk about the stupid Knicks-Nets rivalry.
He's off to the races now.
Paul Pierce and Raymond Felton going at each other in the media, essentially, is one of the most boring things in the world.
Oh, I love Raymond Felton's comment, though. He said it's on our – we've got New York on our jerseys. It's one of the most self-evident things I've ever heard. Of course, we're the team from New York. We have New York on our jerseys.
I mean, Jesus. Like
– they care about this stuff, man. New York cares.
I don't think they do.
You don't?
I really don't think they do.
You don't think Knicks fans and Nets fans care? I'll tell you, Nets fans, I will promise you care about it.
I don't. I think this is a Lakers-Clippers thing. I think maybe it'll matter someday, but ultimately, I don't think they care. Like, I think the Knicks fans just want to be good.
The Knicks fans, I'll agree. The Knicks fans just want to be good. They consider themselves, I think, a little bit above it because Brooklyn's like this new. Like, they just moved into town, and the Knicks are the Knicks, right?
I will say this. I get it from a Nets fan perspective. Like, you just chose to like this team once they moved to Brooklyn. You've got to establish yourself as a real fan and that you want New York to be your territory and all that crap. Like, I get it. Like, that it's hard when you switch to liking that team in the middle of your life. I get that you've got to really hit, like, you've got to be the loud one to really get noticed and to establish yourself as a real fan. So I get that. Knicks fans, they've been there. I just think Knicks fans, like, they made it through Isaiah somewhat, and now they're just like, we want fun basketball. We like Carmelo. We like
the good fans are like that. Some of the fans think that their rivalry is with the Heat, and I think that's silly.
Yeah, I mean, some, like, Celtics fans the last 2 years thought they had a rivalry with the Heat. That's you only have a rivalry with the teams that you can beat.
Well, I think Miami did have a legitimate rivalry with Boston because of what the Celtics did to Wade and LeBron for that 3 year period. I think that was legitimate.
I guess so.
And you know, and they had a lot of intense rivalry, and the fact that Rondo hates them so much. Rondo is open with how much disdain he has for LeBron.
Did they try to trade Rondo at one point? Why does he dislike them so much?
Right. Rondo, but man, like, I watched the halftime interview the other day where he was just like talking about them falling on the floor and just like his outright. And I saw another one of when they left the floor early versus in that year before matchup. It was just, I love how much Rondo hates that team. It's just kind of hilarious to me. But I do think, well, I think part of it is just, New York is so prideful in and of itself because they have a right to be New York, right? And so, with the Kendrick Lamar thing, right? There's the whole King of New York thing. And so somebody's supposed to quote unquote run it. And part of it is we're really short on great rivalries right now in the league. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, for sure.
And I want to make this clear. I don't mind it. The whole players hanging out in the offseason together. Look, these guys are professionals. They're going to play with each other at some point.
If you're mad at that, you don't understand
people
at all. And, like, Michael Jordan is best friends with Charles Barkley and Patrick Ewing. Like, he hung out with his rivals.
Yeah.
They went golfing and gambled. Like, this is not a new thing.
Zach Lowe, I gave Zach Lowe so many rides from his hotel to the arena in Memphis.
Sure.
Just all the time, you know? I'm the Barkley to his Jordan.
To be fair, you were trying to steal his contact. You were trying to bump his iPhone and steal his contacts.
Exactly. I was just trying to get a glimpse of those numbers so I could take them, become the big newsbreaker that I wish I was. I think if Chicago had two teams, it would be a rivalry.
I guess so. I just
what, do you well. I guess here's the thing. Do you care about rivalries at all? Are they fun to you at all?
They're forced. I think that they're a natural rivalry. Like the Celtics Lakers rivalry of the '80s was legit, and that made it. And that's fun.
Suns Spurs mid 2000s.
I think. No, that was
really?
That was really forced to me.
Why?
I also felt both sides were just really annoying, from a fan standpoint. Like. Freaking out about, like, I was really like the people freaked out about, like, the Robert Horry hip check, and I just remember watching him, like, really, it didn't look like Nash tried to sell that call to you at all. Like, that looked like a pretty just routine play to me. Like, that was one guy giving a decently hard foul and another guy selling it, and it looked a lot worse than it did than it was, and I don't know, I didn't care about that. Like, the Knicks-Bulls rivalries of the 90s, I liked. The Heat-Knicks rivalries of the late 90s, I liked.
Knicks-Pacers?
Yeah, Knicks-Pacers were fun.
How about Kings-Lakers? You were out in second.
That was hard because, well, I was rooting for the Lakers, so, because my friends were so annoying as Kings fans that I wanted them to lose. Which is a really immature way to conduct yourself, but that's the truth.
You're such a good friend.
Yeah, that's just how I am. I enjoyed I think the Blazers-Lakers had a decent rivalry, along with the Lakers. And the thing is, I never felt like the Lakers and Spurs had a rivalry, and I felt they should have.
Yeah, they should have, but they didn't. I agree with that.
Yeah, but I like there was a Blazers-Lakers thing for a couple of years that I enjoyed.
Grizzlies-Clippers, I will say Grizzlies-Clippers is legitimate.
Yeah, I just am not involved with those two fan bases at all. So
those two teams genuinely dislike each other, and that's not just usually it's just the fans. Those two teams dislike one another.
Yeah.
There's a palpable distaste between the two teams.
Yeah. I enjoyed the Celtics Pistons one right after they got KG.
Yeah, that was good.
That was a that was a pretty decent one, I would say.
The Celtics won in Detroit and were like hooping and hollering and like Chauncey Billups and Rip Hamilton were really offended and were like, "You haven't won anything yet." And then the Celtics won the championship by beating them in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Right.
Yeah, that one I wish had gone on longer. I wish that one had been a little bit more contemporary.
Yeah, and then then Joe Dumars traded for Allen Iverson.
And Pacers Pistons was great until you know what.
Yeah, happened. that was good. That should have been just a really fun one for years.
So, what teams have never had a rivalry? The Bobcats have never had one.
I would say the Timberwolves have never had a rivalry.
Have the Magic?
Magic. With the Pacers in the mid-90s, maybe? They faced off a couple times.
I think this is the best chance for your Timberwolves to get a rivalry. I think they can get one this year.
They almost had one with the Spurs, and they almost had one with the Mavericks in the early to mid-2000s. But like, I wouldn't say anything was actually significant enough to be a rivalry.
They need to have one of those things where they have a series of really close games that are dramatic during the regular season and then face that team in the playoffs, and then they'll be there.
Yeah, they were kind of set up 2 years ago to have that with the Thunder.
Yeah,
and then Ricky blew out his knee.
Yeah.
So maybe the Thunder could end up being, because it is a division team. They typically play the Thunder pretty decently, like play them better than they should, and maybe if they happen to get a 1-8 matchup in the playoffs, obviously with the Wolves being the 1 and the Thunder being the 8, maybe then they could muster something up. I could see, well, just the whole Perea Westbrook thing would create some kind of tension.
Going back to Knicks Nets, I do kind of want something dramatic to happen during the regular season and the postseason. I really want them to play just because I want the owners to overreact.
Yeah, I think that you could get something out of that. Like, I think one can materialize, especially with the teams. Like, you've got KG, Carmelo, and I actually think Tyson Lopez could be a really interesting, tough matchup for the whole season. And Raymond Felton just seems to hate everybody, so you can manufacture something there. I think we could get one, but I think as of right now, I just don't think anybody truly cares outside of like a Nets fan base that is trying to establish themselves as like, hey, we are a legitimate team in the league again.
KG Mello.
Some kind of cereal. I don't remember what it was.
Cereal, I'm telling you. I think it'd be really amazing because I actually want this to go into like full blown wrestler promoter. Like the Nets beat the Knicks like 4-1 in a second round series, and then Prokhorov holds a public funeral for the Knicks.
I think the thing that hurts them is that Jay-Z's no longer involved. Like he's still, I know he still has his seats and all that, and like I'm sure he'll still root for the Nets, but like the whole tweet of like the city's under new management after the Nets beat the Knicks, like I think that could drum up stuff. Like I think you kind of need that celebrity aspect to it.
Well, and you need a figurehead because Darren's never gonna say stuff like that. Just Darren's never gonna do that. Brooke Lopez is never gonna do that. Like that's why having Pierce and Terry is, those are the only real trash talkers I think that the team's gonna have. Joe Johnson's quiet. Like
A Jason Terry, J.R. Smith trash talking session could be fun through the media. Oh, I could come around to that.
And they had last year. See, I'm telling you, we got all these.
It's not. There's nothing's been cooked, but we got all the ingredients.
We got the ingredients.
We're in the kitchen.
All right, this is too long for a stupid conversation.
Way too long. This should have ended 20 minutes ago.
Hashtag things we could say every day. Who's tomorrow?
I don't know. I know the Raptors are Thursday.
Wednesday. Tomorrow's the Celtics, which we gave to Royce.
Oh, I'm so glad I don't have to write that.
Yeah, Raptors on Thursday, and then I've got the miserable Sixers on Friday. Okay.
What do you even write for the Sixers? You should just post pictures of tanks.
It's actually not a bad idea. I might do that. Like, off-season additions, a big Bradley tank. Draft, a gigantic Bradley tank. Panzer would be great.
Yeah.
All right, Zach. Thanks so much.
Thanks, man.